is good to be a gangster.
Hi, everyone. This episode of Headlong Into Monsters presents Trailblazing Terror, brought to you by Horror Hound Spring Film Festival. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the next episode of Trailblazing Terror on Headlong Into Monsters, the ADHD of horror movie podcast. I am Rob Ghoul, your elderly emo, coming at you from beautiful Tooele, Utah. This is this part of the show. We take a second to spotlight upcoming creators in the horror genre, directors, writers, actors, producers, authors, and everyone in between. So keep an eye on that baby monitor and move your fucking legs and join us as we dive headlong into monsters. This is episode 5 of Trailblazing Terror, and today I'm speaking to Sean, I hope I say this correctly, Kennelly?
Kennelly, that was very close. Close enough to let it pass, that's good.
Good, all right. Kennelly, Sean Kennelly and Eric Silvera, co-directors of the short film Two Knocks on a Door that streamed this spring at the Horror Hound Film Festival. How the hell are you guys doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us on. We're excited to talk.
Hell yeah, man. I'm really bummed out because when you guys sent me the link for the screener, I thought to myself was like, shit, man, I really wish I could have like seen it when it's screened. I unfortunately missed the screening because I am a dumbass.
there's a lot going on at that festival. It's a very busy place. It's hard to keep a tight schedule there. I understand.
It's true. I mean, the schedule is tight. It's really hard to fit everything in. But you guys, we talked Friday during the kind of like meet and greet of directors, press, and all that whatnot. And you guys were great. I loved what you were saying. And you kind of told me a little bit about the movie or the film you guys had. Two Knocks on a Door. But for the listeners, can you guys give just a general synopsis of the film?
Sure. So the basic gist is a young father at home in the evening suspects that there's an intruder in his house, so he goes to investigate, and what he eventually discovers is something much more darker. And that's without giving away any twists, which, you know, we can probably get into during this conversation, but that's the simple logline.
Yeah, that's pretty simplistic. Do you guys want to get into spoilers? Do you guys want to do spoiler free?
No, we can get into spoilers for sure. 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I always want to make sure before, you know, we do anything.
No, I think it'll be more of a more entertaining conversation, and you'll be able to ask more direct questions if we can actually talk about the shit that actually happens in it. Yeah.
Oh, for real. So this young father, I mean, there's very little dialogue in the actual film. What was the decision behind that? But behind, because there's, I don't think there's dialogue for the first 10 minutes or so, is there?
Yeah, that's about right.
I think there's one line in the opening couple minutes where he says, "Damn, dude, you're stoned." But that's the only thing. And it kind of mutters it. So you have to like really be listening to hear it.
You go, Sean.
Well, I
was just gonna say, I think kind of for the, you know, when we were first started editing it, sorry, Eric, is your mic breaking up a little bit, or Gryla, are you hearing that?
I am hearing that. I think it happens when your mic rubs against your hoodie collar.
Oh, okay. Let me. Is that better now? If I hold it like that.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Just good stuff. Take two. So, yeah, I think part of the reason we decided to go with, you know, the first part being pretty much no dialogue and the second part being VO is that we really thought of this movie as two parts. The first part being more kind of your conventional horror story where a guy hears a noise, he's looking around the house, you know, there's some jump scares, there is like what's lurking behind the closet, you're not really sure. And the second half is much more of, you know, in your head, a psychological thriller, somebody that is faced with one of their deepest and darkest fears and how do they react to that. So because we really kind of had the movie be in two parts, it was important for us to kind of really think about how we were telling those two parts, one being almost a silent movie and the other part being completely VO. And we thought that really helped make sure like the audience had like that direct splice in the middle. It's like, oh, I'm watching a different movie now. The journey is going in a different direction.
I mean, I could definitely see that. It does feel like there's a pretty dynamic shift, at the baby monitor when the guy sees a hand in the baby monitor, which was terrifying. I have a personal story to share, kind of towards the end, but
Nice. Ooh, I'd like to hear that.
There's that.
So I guess now we could just get into the spoiler territory. So the big thing that happens. The guy investigates sounds in his house, doesn't see anything. We see he checks on his baby. He locks the house up, puts the alarm on, goes to the bathroom, he jerks off, he does his nighttime routine, all this kind of facial stuff, and takes care of himself, gets into bed, goes to sleep, wakes up in the middle of the night, turns on his baby monitor, watches his wife stroke his baby's face, and he's so happy and excited, and he's loving seeing his wife take care of her. And then he feels an arm wrapped around him, and he realizes his wife is in bed, and that there's a hand on the monitor, and he doesn't know who it is, and he's frozen in fear and terror. So that's kind of like where the things go the last half of the film, which, as Sean was saying, is like kind of the demarcation of the first half of investigating stuff, and the second half of like, oh my God, what the fuck just happened here?
Yeah, and yeah. I think frozen in fear is, we're just trying to, I feel like that's scraping the surface of where we go with it, in the sense of, he really hears what's going on in the room with his baby off screen. You don't see anything, but during all of that, he just remains in bed the entire time. And even until his partner, his wife is, starts taking on the role of the hero, goes into the room, the baby's room. Our lead character, Mike, still stays in the bed. So it's really kind of, watching our main character at the end of the movie, just being paralyzed by fear and, letting the audience take that in and react in their own way.
That when you say paralyzed, I mean, he's trying. He's like psyching himself up to just get out of bed. And that's why at the beginning I said, move your fucking legs. Cause like, that's kind of what he tells himself. Eventually he does stand up. He pulls a knife out of his dresser or out of his bedside table, opens it. And you think he's finally going to go up and do something, because at this point he's heard his baby crying, his wife screaming, and I'm not entirely sure, because it all happens off screen, like you said, but his wife get murdered, right?
I think it's safe to say that. I mean, nothing is seen, but it's safe to say that, Raul. You're not too off.
Yeah. So, and he's psyching himself up. He's just like, move your leg, pick up your foot. And he can't even bring himself to do that. At the end, he does bring himself to actually sit down, which is funny. But holy Moses, like the film ends with, and you never see the intruder except for the hand in the baby monitor. Like there's no motive. There's no like explicit violence. There's no nothing except for the suggestion that someone was in there, the suggestion, the audio of violence, and then an open door kind of indicating that he did his thing. Didn't even bother with the husband because he didn't fucking do anything. And then just left out the front door.
Yeah. Fucked up, huh?
It's so nihilistic, man. I was smiling from ear to ear.
It's so funny you describe it as nihilistic, because when we had a cut that we were like, we're good. We're like, it was like, it was pretty, like sound mixing was like close, like the color correction was coming. We sent it to our lead, Max Werdendijk, who played the character of Mike, and he actually had a young baby when he watched it. So when he played the role, I think he had like a 1.5 month old, something like that. He was deep in newborn daddy phase. And then so the time he finally, we finished post production maybe 6 months later or so, 5-6 months later, he watched it and he emailed us or texted us, whatever it was, in the middle of the night, and he literally went, guys, this is so fucking dark. He goes, this is so nihilistic, and it never occurred to me that it was. And then he said it, you've said it, we've since heard people describe it that way, and I'm like, oh, okay, all right, it's a fair way to think about it.
Well, I mean, if you didn't think it was nihilistic, what kind of ending did you think it was?
Fairy tale, happily ever after. He rides off into the sunset.
No. No, I think we knew it was fucked up. I think we debated so many darker things for the ending, like how dark do we really go? How much do we actually show? Like that. By the time we landed on the ending where we did. We were like, no, this is just right. So it never occurred to me that just right was actually supremely fucking dark and nihilistic. But yes, you're right. It is.
Okay. So you guys, there was obviously a lot of planning into this movie. You said, you know, a lot of different ways it could have ended. But what about the beginning? Like, what was the inception? Where did the idea of just this dude come from and this story? Where did that come from?
Yeah, I wrote a short story several years ago, or I guess maybe like 2016-17, and it wasn't unlike what happens in the opening of the film. I was living in an apartment in New York City, and someone rang my either the front door or the doorbell to the to the building, woke me up. I was on my couch. I had no pants on, just like the character. There was water spilling all over me, and I was like, "What the fuck is going on here?" And I got up, and then I closed down the house. I was like, it was late in the middle of the night, and it was, who's ringing the front door? And then I waited for someone to come kind of bang on the front, my actual apartment door, whatever it was. And I was staying there listening, nothing happened, got up and went to bed. And so that was the kind of like the genesis of the story of like, oh, that's where it happened. And I thought to myself, I've had this fear. Well, ever since I have two kids. I have a 9.5-year-old boy and a 7-year-old daughter. And ever since my son was a baby, I used to think, what would happen if I turned on the baby monitor and there was a hand on the monitor? And so I used what happened to me, someone ringing my doorbell, you know, in the middle of the night, getting me off the couch when I kind of fell asleep there, as the genesis, and put that to my fear in a short story form. And then I, you know, finished it. I shared it with Sean, and I thought about it. It was kind of like a fear I live with. And when Sean and I were working on our first feature film, I always thought, I was like, I want to turn that short story into a short film. I was like, it was in my head the whole time. And when we were kind of deciding on our next project, we were working on a second feature film that kind of fell apart. Sean and I, you know, we both said, let's make a short. And I said, I got something. I resent him the short story, and he's like, let's do it. And he was like, he's like, Eric, we got to move this from an apartment. He goes, we got to make this in a house. Sean was like, a house is scarier than an apartment. And that was kind of the genesis. And we always knew, like, we wanted to start it the same kind of way. Someone in a house being woken up, and, you know, we changed kind of the setting, because in the short story, the guy's like home from work. It's a little different, but like, it's like this guy home on a Friday night or whatever, a late at night on a weekend maybe, and getting a little fucked up by himself, his new dad, and take it from there.
I mean, I love the fact that we don't really know anything about this guy. We don't know the day. We don't know his application. We don't even know his name until he like starts monologuing to himself.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think we really try to lean into the mundane. You know, when you first meet this character, he's just getting a little stoned. He's, you know, got a little pizza on the table. It's a Friday night or Saturday night. He's just back from work. Like, he's cleaning baby bottles. He's doing his nightly routine. Like, this isn't an exciting situation we're seeing, but he is. Because he hears this noise, obviously paranoia is creeping into his mind, and he's searching the house, he's looking behind doors. But we really just kind of wanted to paint the picture of, this is an average guy that probably thinks he's tough and can defend his family. And this is someone that he's doing things that we've all done, even if we don't really know exactly who he is. We can probably all relate to that feeling of being tired at the end of work, and maybe just like, you know, having a little too much to drink maybe, and just kind of just getting ready for bed, like kind of like normal things. But we wanted to just, you know, have that basic introduction and then force that character to go into like a much darker place when he sees somebody on the baby monitor.
So I love that it felt very routine. Even him like jacking it over his toilet felt pretty routine. At least the second time I watched it, I'm like, oh yeah, he's just part of his bedtime routine. I get it. You mean you sleep better after you have a good orgasm.
Raul, thank you so much, because there were so many times in the so many times when we were sharing our script, when we were talking, we had talked with one actress, and she's like, why is the guy jerking off? What's wrong with his marriage? And I finally, we went through this whole thing with it, and it was not the person that played the part. We were, you know, as we were kind of auditioning and interviewing actresses and stuff for the part of the wife, she really kept poking. She goes, does he not love his wife? And finally I said, you know, sometimes you just want to jerk off at the end of the night. I was like, you know, we have all these like like metaphorical reasons why we consider it, but sometimes it comes to that. Like, we're just trying to show the guy's evening routine, who he is, where he is in his life, and like what he does. And that part of that, Sean said, like part of that, like the mundaneness is like, all right, like he was caught down in the middle of the night with his pants in the living room with his pants off. He's probably gonna jerk off. Then there was tissues on the couch next to him. Didn't happen. I because he passed out beforehand. And so he had to finish it off in the bed, in the bathroom, before bed. And so, yes, that's what it is. Sometimes it's just as simple as that.
Absolutely. It didn't feel like a mundanity or anything like that. There's no sign that his marriage is failing or in trouble, right, or anything like that. I mean, he could be in a very happy marriage. It's just a part of maybe his nightly routine, you know, whack it off a little bit and go to bed. Totally fine. Whatever. I don't care.
It's a safe space we're in right now. Thank you.
Safe space. It is a safe space, man. I get it. What I found funny is that, I mean, when he hears the noise and he's investigating his house, there's a scene where he goes downstairs. He grabs a knife and he's heading downstairs into his basement. He's wearing Crocs, which I thought was really funny because I don't know if it was a conscious decision on your guys' part, but he did have those Crocs in sports mode with like the band around the heel. So, I mean, he was ready to rumble. He's ready to get active.
It was the Crocs and everything around it, and including the color, were a conscious decision. Was that Max that was like, I have yellow Crocs, what should we have?
Yeah, and it wasn't written into the script, but working with the actors on their costumes, something about that felt perfect to me. I mean, just first of all, them being the color yellow and kind of representing like the idea of fear, and also just Crocs being kind of like that suburban geeky dad. So I don't know, it just I feel like it really helped build out the character without saying anything.
Oh, 100%. I was like, I felt exactly like I knew the kind of guy he was, especially when he like jumps down the stairs and starts wildly swinging his knife around in the shadows of the basement. It was fucking hilarious.
That's awesome. Yeah, that part in screenings tends to get a big laugh. And that was the goal. You know, like the goal is like, how do we have the cliche of someone going down the stairs and the music, like that kind of buildup of the score, the spine tingling score. How do we play with that, but then like goof on it a little bit, you know, because so many times you get the jump scare there and it's nothing. And that's like its own kind of form of laughter and relief, but it's not necessarily a joke always. It's like a nervous laughter, but we're like, let's play this up for like the cliche and trope it is and then make it fun. And then, like you said, you know exactly who that character is when they go to do that.
Absolutely, man. And then he kind of surprised me because, I mean, he's scared of the potential that someone's in his home. But then we have this like kind of daydream fantasization, almost like he's romanticizing what he would do if someone actually did break in. Because, I mean, there's a little instance where someone's behind him. They fight. He drops the knife. He gets the upper hand on him slightly. And then it flash cuts to him and we realize that none of that happened. It was just a daydream.
Totally, totally. I think it was important for us, for the audience, to realize that this is a character that thinks he's tough. You know, this is a character that thinks he's a hero. And, you know, I think something important that we wanted to show is at the opening, he's watching an action movie. You know, he wakes up and, you know, he's rooting on a fight scene and, you know, like two people battling. And then when he has his own daydreaming of fighting, we actually just tried to replicate the exact choreography of that action movie to what he's doing. So he's not just winning a fight in his head. He's literally playing an action hero in his head, which of course how he thinks of himself kind of crumbles by the end of the movie. He's not that version, but I feel like we all have this idea of maybe we are bigger. Well, we don't actually know how big we are necessarily because often we're not put in that situation where it's tested, but I think we all like to think we would act in a certain way depending on if a dark scenario happened. And this is a character that thinks he would be tough and would defend his family. And we wanted the audience to feel that. So when we do get to the end, it maybe hits a little different.
Yeah. Your guys' intention of portraying this guy as like a self-proclaimed badass that's going to, you know, crack skulls, take names, you know, he looks at himself as an action hero. 100%. I didn't catch the fact that it was the same choreography in the film. I'll have to go back and look at it because that's really cool.
A little trivia. So the bad guy in our movie was Eric's dad, And the feature that he's watching in the movie was actually our first feature that we wrote together. It was an action comedy. So he's watching our movie because, you know, because partly because we didn't have to ask anyone for the rights for it. We're like, oh, it's our movie. So we couldn't have him watch Die Hard. That could ring some bells. But so Eric's dad plays the villain in our movie that we wrote. And then we had Eric's dad come back to set and play the villain in this movie. So not only do we mimic the choreography, he's fighting the same bad guy from the opening scene, which, yeah. Little trivia for you out there.
That's actually really freaking cool. I didn't even know that. You guys will have to send me that a way to watch that one too, because now I'm very intrigued.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We didn't go. That's our first one was a movie called In Action. It's a low budget action comedy. It's on Prime. It's on Tubi. I don't know. It's still on Paramount Plus. I know it was on there at one point. I don't know if it's still on there. But like, you can find it on streaming. Raul, you'll probably dig that. It's weird. It's definitely different. It's a different tone than Two Knocks on a Door, but it's fun. So, you know, a little plug for our first film.
Well, I mean, you said action comedy, and I'm there all the way. I fucking love movies like Kung Fu Hustle, right? Kung Pao, Enter the Fist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I fucking love those kind of movies. So, like, yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like that, but very different. Like, it's a two person action movie. There's only two people in the movie. It's me and Sean that you see, and then there's like what we call there's actors, but you never see their faces. You never hear their voices. Me and Sean do all the voices of the characters, whether they're male or female. We have animation and like different kinds of mixed forms of media with toys and all kinds of stuff that we use. We have a car chase scene where there's no car. It's just the two of us in a car chair and car seats. So
what the shit?
It's a crazy movie.
I wouldn't call it nihilistic, but it's a little out there. So
I wouldn't. Yeah, it's not nihilistic, but it's definitely out there.
I mean, I'm down. I mean, that sounds hilarious to me. So I'll be checking that out for sure. Let's see. Oh yeah. We were talking about this guy, like self-proclaimed badass, and the intention is definitely on the screen. Like it 100% that's what I got. And I'd be surprised if anyone didn't get that, because I mean, we spent 10 minutes of himself, I guess, figuratively and literally jerking himself off. I mean,
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think a big thing for us with the film was, I it's funny because I have a somewhat literal interpretation of what my intention was when I wrote the short story, and then kind of as I did the first draft of the script before I sent it to Sean, and mine was very much about like exploring masculinity and like who you think you are, you know, as a man, like what you see in media. And then how that affects who you think you are too. You know, if you watch films about badasses and you think of yourself as a badass, and then, you know, as a man, you're told that you're supposed to be a badass to protect your family. And then what happens when that's not the case, when you can't do it, when you're confronted by a situation that forces you to really like look inside yourself and be inside yourself, and you can't be the person you think you are. You can't be the protector. You can't be what society tells you you're supposed to be. And what does that do to you? And what is that kind of overall feel like, right? And then Sean, you know, when he read it, I don't want to steal your thunder, I'll let you jump into it, but I think when he read the short story, you know, he kind of got that. And when he read the first draft, I think, of the script, because the way Sean and I work together, generally one of us will come up with an idea, and like either Sean will take a draft and send it to me, and then I'll write and send it back to him, and then it slowly kind of merges our sensibilities together. And so for this one, I wrote a draft and sent it to Sean, and then he started making tweaks, and we went back and forth. But I think his interpretation of that first draft was different. And for him, it was about like, you know, I think he saw what I wanted to say there. But I think for him, it was much more about like, as a parent, what is like the weight of parenthood and family? And what does that do to you? And how does that like paralyze you? And like, that was a different interpretation. And so like, we've started to realize, like, you know, as we've talked to other people, we've heard like different theories on what the film means. It's like one of Sean's friends who's an artist told us that he thought it was about being in the closet and like struggling with that and coming out, you know, what it is to come out, which was like not what we were going for at all. But like, you know, it was interesting to hear that kind of interpretation. Also, that's his own kind of thing with masculinity too. So I think you know, what we each intended. I think what I intended is on the screen in a very kind of, you know, literal way. And then it's been interesting to hear other people have different interpretations of what the film means to them, even down to the ending where, like, I think, Raul, like, you kind of nailed what the ending, what it is and what our intention was. But we've heard a lot, we've heard some people say, like, the ending is really open-ended. And we've gotten emails from people being like, well, what happened there? Like, what is it? So I think it's been cool for us to see, like, do people, like, get our vision and, like, we feel like we nailed it, and other people, like, take it a whole other way. Very different than what we thought, but that's, like, the coolest part about film and art is, like, it's open up to the viewer too to interpret how they see fit.
I mean,
and I think going off of that, you know, when Eric first pitched the idea and sent me the script, what I was obsessed with and what I really wanted to just write a whole movie about was why he's not getting out of bed. You know, like, that was that's like where my heart was in the story. You know, the beginning is, again, a little more of a conventional horror movie where someone's going around their house looking for noises, and then they're faced with this greatest fear. And again, up to that point, you think this character is like, oh, of course he's going to get out of bed. Of course he's going to help his family, and he doesn't. And not only doesn't he get out of the bed, he has VO that's asking him to get out of bed, but he's still not getting out of bed. So I kept saying, like, why the hell isn't he getting out of bed? Like, everything is pointing to getting out of bed. Like, there's no reason for him to stay in the bed. And I love that. I love the idea of a person being broken but not fully understanding why they're being broken, and leaving it to the reader or the audience to, you know, try to get to the bottom of it. And for me, and, you know, Eric, you know, spoke about it, is I think, like, the weight of responsibility, whether or not you're a parent or not a parent, you know, life is hard. And even though we think we can somehow, you know, stand up to it, we can't. And I think we all face those fears and face those moments where we're literally paralyzed and it's hard to move and get out of bed in the morning. And this person is at a crossroads where it's like the main moment in his life where he has to stand up. And I always imagined as, you know, the world is too heavy for him in this moment and he can't do it. And, you know, I think whether or not anyone has been in that situation, I think we can all imagine what that would feel like. And yeah, I really love that psychology and wanted to lean into it.
So, why? I have a theory as to why he couldn't get up. You know, just the analysis, the paralysis, paralysis through analysis, the shock of it all. But in through your interpretation, Sean, that's what you wanted to say. So, like, from the horse's mouth, why did he not get out of bed?
Good question. I don't think there's a literal reason why he didn't get out of bed. I think it's, you know, I mean, literally Eric mentioned that we're both on each other's side here, but I think we both went into this being like having different perspectives, what it could be. And I mean, I definitely leaned into what Eric was saying about like exploring masculinity and, you know, society thinks you should be a certain way with your family. And then when you were tested, like what happens when you can't act that way. So I think we were definitely both leaning into what we wanted to tell. But I mean, to Eric's point, I think there's a lot of different reasons why this person couldn't get out of bed. And I don't think we are specifically telling the audience like, oh, this is why it's not happening. I think I have a few different reasons. Eric has a few different reasons. And I would love to hear if you have a reason, but I don't think there's a wrong answer to answer your question.
Okay. So the fact that half the movie is building him up as a character that he needs to be, or that he is, quote unquote, is right in his mind. And then the other half of the movie is the stark realization that he's none of those things. I think you guys found a really good, like, compromise between like the way you wanted to tell the story. I think it's really cool. Now, very, very rarely do I, as a viewer, find myself commentating as to what's part of the screen, what's going on the screen. There are people that talk, you know, like, oh, don't go in there, bitch. Oh, the killer's right behind you. You know, like the Randy moment in Scream, right? Totally.
I'll be right back.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So, I rarely find myself doing that to the screen, but when shit hit the fan, I was yelling at myself as hard, if not harder, than he was yelling at himself because he wouldn't move. And I was yelling at him to fucking move, yeah. Right? So I think that was pretty effective. Now, I wasn't there for the screening at Horror Hound, but obviously you guys were. What was the, like, audience reaction to that?
We were sitting in front of someone who didn't know we were the filmmakers. They were, and this person was like, just go already. Why won't he go? And I knocked Sean. I needed him. I'm like, yeah, man, you got this. What the fuck we want? And I honestly, I think what happened, what we've seen a couple different things. I think what happened at Horror Hound, that exact thing happened where someone was like, just go already. And honestly, I think at the end of the film, people were in fucking shell shock a little bit, because it was like the film ended and it was just like dead silence. Like people were like, what the fuck did we just see? That was isn't that the feeling you kind of felt like? It was like, whoa. Yeah. And then somebody started clapping and they were like, oh, right, they clapped. And then we got questions during the Q&A where you're kind of asking similar things that you were. And, you know, I think, Sean, weren't you in one screening where someone, I wasn't there, it was one where we played in Kansas City, and Sean, can you say someone yelled, what the fuck?
Yes. That's verbatim what they said. And I was like, yes, say it louder. To the people in the back, say it louder.
But yeah, that's the reaction we want, is like, just go. Like, we kind of felt like he's the character's like an audience surrogate, like telling him to go, and like everyone should be feeling like that. Like, move already. Do that.
Yeah.
You know?
I think there's also our main character, Max Wortendyke, who plays Mike. There's been a few visceral reactions to his performance where people were like, I hated you. I hated you. And I think Max's wife, who saw the movie, you know, I think she saw it once and there was a lot she enjoyed about it, but she did not enjoy watching her husband play this part. And again, you know, and my partner who saw it did not, like, had such a strong reaction to watching this character not react, that, you know, I think that's also a win when someone hates a character. I mean, obviously you don't want them to hate your movie, but having such a strong reaction to a character is, you know, I'll take that as a win.
Yeah, his wife, when I met his wife, she came up to me. He's like, because he was at a film festival for this movie. I don't know if you've seen the movie Brightwood. It came out this past fall, and it's an awesome kind of like sci-fi horror time travel kind of flick. It's really cool. It's starting to build a cult audience too, so it's worth checking out if you haven't seen it. He introduced me to his wife at the screening, and she went, oh, you know, this is the co-director of Two Knocks. She went, I hated your movie, and I. Oh, okay. She goes, no, it was so scary, but I can never watch it again. She goes, I hated what happened then. I was like, and you know, she's a young mom. I think at that point, same thing. Her son, their kid would have been 6 months old when she was there, 8 months old. So it was like, it hits. And our editor's wife said, she's like, I love the film. She's like, I hated the main character. Like, that's one. So we've found women, and especially moms, tend to have this kind of visceral reaction to the film and really don't like the main character because of that. But like, you know, that understands, because he literally abandons his wife and his children and he betrays them.
Oh, 100%. I can't imagine that there's a single woman that's like, yeah, I'd hit that, you know. Like, no woman, I assume, I mean, I don't want to speak for women, but I can't imagine that there's a single person, man or woman, who wants, like, who believes that their partner would be this cowardice in a moment of, like, do or die, your life's on the line, the family's doomed type of scenario. Like, holy shit, you know, like, especially for a man, you know, who's supposed to be the protector, you know, the defender, the protector of his family, you know.
Well, it's
which is really, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go. I'm good.
Well, I was just going to say that it's really funny that it's a portrayal of masculinity. But I feel like there's a lot of instances in movies where shit hits the fan and it's the mom that has, like, a very protective, like, this needs to get solved now type of reaction. I mean, obviously in your film, the second the mom knows something's up, she's out of bed. Poltergeist, right?
Yep.
The second Carol Ann goes missing, it's the mom that takes action. And, you know, she's ultimately the one that gets their daughter out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Insidious, right?
Yep.
The first movie. And there's a baby monitor scene in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And a slight paralysis when, you know, she hears the voice. But, you know, like, there's a moment where she's questioning herself, and then the voice like screams through the baby monitor. She drops it and goes running to her baby. So like,
yeah, we talked about that. We even talked about that in, like, in terms of like just non-scary scenarios, just what it was like, you know, as dads with newborns, and, you know, the mom like hearing the sound and the baby waking up in the middle of the night and hearing it and getting up to go check on them and things like that. And maybe like sometimes, and we were like, we had to analyze our own behavior sometimes a little too, being like, yeah, maybe I faked being asleep and didn't hear it, so I didn't have to go get up in the middle of the night to check on the baby or give them a bottle, whatever it might be. And so there were things like that we even like discussed and thought about just from like a basic level. And I remember talking to a friend, and I was telling him about the film. He goes, oh yeah. He goes, my wife jumps up. She takes care. She knows what to do in the middle of the night. He goes, I go to work. I would sleep in this night. So like, I think there's like, we wanted to play a little bit with that too. Just like, it is the mom in the end that like is the protector of the family. Even if we think, you know, the dads or the husbands are supposed to be, at least in the world I live in, I feel like my wife, she's the boss. She rules the roost. And the reason why we are, you know, like a normal family, and normal is not the right word. What's the word I'm looking for? The reason why
nuclear,
nuclear. No, the reason why we thrive or survive as a family is because my wife has her shit together. Because if it was me, we'd be a bunch of fucking animals, just barely getting by. So we wanted to play that up too, and make that kind of come across very quickly in the limited screen time that the wife has when she's not like not screaming or not like sleeping.
Yeah, it's funny. 100%. With the wife having limited screen time, I mean, just like Eric was saying, she's definitely the vehicle of the movie. I mean, when we were talking to actresses, and Ashley Loren Elrod, who we went with, is, you know, she screamed on the phone. She was kind of like, she clearly like could really lean into, you know, being something that it just is scaring the shit out of the audience without being on screen. And we really needed her to like, she was part of the reason that we want the audience to like scream at the main character, Mike, like, go help her. She needs you. What is happening? And like her performance is really, again, regardless of most of it is off screen, that VO is why we needed people to hate Mike, the main character, based on what she was giving the audience.
Well, I mean, if your goal was that, then you succeeded. I mean, I had that reaction. It sounds like other people had that reaction. And when people tell you, you know, I hated your movie, I hated your character, that's always great. Even because you never want anyone to be neutral on your movie. You don't want someone to say, yeah, it was all right. It was okay. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Because they're not going to remember that movie next week. Yeah. But if they loved your movie or they hated your movie, that's going to stick with them for a long time.
Yeah, we found it seems to be sticking with people that have seen it. You know, there was a guy approached us on the convention floor the next day. You know, he saw the film, and he saw us doing a panel that morning because he had missed the Q&A, so he didn't know actually where the filmmakers were pointing. And he saw us that morning, and, you know, a few hours later, he came up. He was like, hey, you're the guys that made Two Knocks on the Door, right? He goes, oh, man. He goes, I love that movie. He goes, I love realistic horror and things that could happen in real life. And he goes, that really fucked me up. And he goes, I texted my wife about it and told her. And he was like, I couldn't tell her everything. I told her I just saw like a really fucked up movie. And, you know, we've had people tell us after, and we've shared it with friends, because obviously we're on the film festival circuit. So it's not streaming anywhere. It's not online anywhere. It's just been playing the circuit until we, you know, finish up our run towards the end of this year. We've shared it with friends, and we've had friends text me and be like, I freaked out every time I look at the baby monitor in the middle of the night now. Or, you know, my best friend told me the story the night he watched it. And I waited. He had his second kid around the time we finished it. So I waited, you know, 6 to 8 months after he was kind of like out of the crazy newborn phase. It was, you know, it was getting towards where his second kid's going to be a year old. I was like, you can watch it now. Go for it. And the night he watched it, he texted me the next morning. He was like, our baby monitor was making a weird sound in the middle of the night. He was like, and then he goes, the alarm to my house went off in the middle of the night, and neither of those things ever happened. He was like, and he goes, all I could think about was your movie. And he said he was going around investigating things like the fucking character. You know what I mean? So like, I think there's things that happen that, I think it lingers with people, especially I think it lingers with people that are, you know, especially parents, and it seems to linger with dads a lot, because I think we've tapped into some kind of subconscious fear that people either think they either have or didn't know they have or now have to think about. So that's that part is exciting and cool.
So yeah, absolutely. I think right now is a good place to share this story I had. So when I was I'm a father, and when my son was about the age of the child in this film, we moved into a new apartment. Well, it was like a duplex, right? It was a house, but there's two living quarters. Anyway, and it was small. His room was right next to our room. We had a baby monitor. We're broke as shit, so we can only afford the audio one. There's no camera or anything, but we could hear everything that was going on. Well, so it was during the day, because at the time I was working nights, my wife was working days, which worked out because we didn't have to have a babysitter. But I'm folding some laundry. He's taking a nap. I get done. I'm just, decompressing, laying down, having a little bit of me time. And I hear some rustling in the baby monitor. I swear to God this happened. I hear some rustling in the baby monitor. And I'm like, my ears perk. And I'm like, what the hell is that? I don't get out of bed. So I'm like, did I hear something? I hear it again. I'm like, what the shit is that? And then I hear a voice that says bebe, which is baby in Spanish, bebe. Oh, like kind of a whispery voice. I'm like, fuck. I run out of bed. I go in there and I'm like, what the shit is? Like, I'm looking around, I'm looking in the corner, I'm checking the closet. I'm like, what's going on? He's asleep.
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh my God, what is? I grab him out of the crib, I take him with me. He's screaming because I just woke him up. Yeah. And I'm like, we huddle in our bedroom. I get him to calm down. We both he falls asleep and I'm just kind of looking all over the place. I didn't sleep well for like 2 weeks after that.
Jeez. Oh my God.
But it was the most terrifying thing that's ever happened. And I swear to God, I heard a voice that said, baby.
Whoa. Was there like outside? Do you think you picked up a different a frequency of like a different monitor somehow?
I mean, it must have. I mean, it's a pretty packed neighborhood. Houses are close together. Yeah, I have a lot of neighbors. Some of them have kids. A lot of them spoke Spanish. So I'm sure it just picked up a frequency from another baby monitors. Whatever.
That's still scary as hell, though. Oh,
scared the shit out of me.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't be sleeping for a week after that either.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's funny. The apartment when you're describing your apartment, that was like the same kind of apartment where I wrote the short story, where it was my son's bedroom, a little tiny bedroom right off of our bedroom in a small apartment in New York City. You know what I mean? So I feel like what you describe, I was like, I could picture where it was, because that's the impetus of the world where I initially thought about this. Like, especially the idea of like a fear of like, can you get out of bed?
Right.
To protect your baby who's literally in the room next door. When we made it a house, it was like, all right, let's make it further away. So the fact is, Raul, you're the kind of guy that would get up and protect
your baby. Yeah, I'm glad that's where this part went. I was like, tell me you got up, right?
Oh, I ran to that.
Yeah, totally.
To his room.
Did you think it was a ghost at any point? Were you like a ghost picking up there? Like a spirit in
there?
Well,
I'm a superstitious person, so I absolutely thought it was a ghost. Yeah. I'm like, El Cucu is after my kid, man. Like,
I mean, when my son was a baby, I am another for my mother. We had a lot of weird things happen in the house around him. And we used to think like he could definitely see spirits and talk to spirits and things like that. And, my mother was once at a medium and she was like, oh yeah, your son is like touched. He can see these things. And like, cause you would hear him talking and kind of babbling to things. And like, it wasn't just like baby babble. And there was one night, I'll never forget, my mother-in-law texted and we had some kind of like camera. And she set up some kind of a camera in the room that she could watch on her iPhone. I forget exactly. We didn't do it. She set it up. I wish I could remember. But essentially, there's an app where like she put this camera in the room, and every night if she wanted to look at the babies from her house, and she lived in Connecticut, we were in the city, she could check on the. She could just watch our son or whatever, and watch him sleep. And there was one night she sent a screenshot, and it was my wife in. We had a little bed in that room for one of my. Either my mother-in-law or my mom slept over and helped with the kids. My son when he was a baby. It was my wife and son in the bed, and there was just a huge orb floating above them. that was only seen through the camera, and she screenshotted and just texted it us. She's like, "Oh, there's a beautiful orb above you." But it was like, "Is it like, you know?" And there were shit like that. I'll never forget when the Pope was in town. I came home from work. Our nanny was there. I said, "We'll see you later." We had the TV on in the living room. We walked to his room for a second, and you know, we were about to walk into my bedroom, and the light was off in my bedroom. And I remember feeling like a weird presence. I remember feeling something eerie. And I turned on the light to go into the bedroom, and he wouldn't walk into the bedroom. He could shake his head no. It must have been a year and a half. No, it wasn't two for sure. And he wouldn't walk in. I said, "Come on." He said, "No." So we went and played in his bedroom for a second. And then when I went back into the living room, the TV was off. And that was like crazy too, because I was like, whatever he was feeling was like, something turned off the TV, and then like the Pope being on the screen there too, like the Pope in town in New York was on the news. So there was like shit like that that happened over time, which is what made me ask you about like a spirit coming over the screen, or you know. And then the logical part of my brain was like, well, it's just like another frequency. Then in the Bronx, my dad's been on used to play with like a walkie-talkie, and then there would be weird creepy voices that would come on, and when my kids were playing with them too and stuff like that. So you know,
it makes you wonder, though, man. It makes you wonder. So,
it does. Yeah. It really does.
Matt, you just gave me goosebumps with that story. I'm not gonna lie. I got a space heater next to me. I'm wearing a really thick hoodie, and you gave me goosebumps. So
I got to. I have two kids. I have two kids, and I don't have. I mean, knock on wood, I don't have one creepy baby monitor story, and I'm so thankful for it. Hearing you guys talk, I'm like, I stare at my baby monitor all the time. I have a 1-year-old, and I'm like making sure every night. But you know, I'm waiting for it to happen. But so far I've gotten lucky. No creepy baby monitors.
Knock on wood, dude. Count your right? Stars.
You want to hear something real weird? All right, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So when we had our second kid, we moved to the Bronx, back closer to where my parents are, in an area where I grew up, and we're in our apartment. And one night, my son probably must have been 5, because this was before COVID. So yeah, it must have been 5. Came into the room, and you know, he's coming to our bed. He's been sleeping in our bed on and off for a couple of years at that point, in the middle of the night. And he says to us, "You know, every night when I come into the room, I lay in bed. There's a man in the corner that just stares at me."
Oh my god.
And we played it real cool. We played it real fucking cool. We were like, "Really? What does he do?" She goes, "He's just an old man that just looks at me." I went, "Oh, okay. All right, cool. Well, you know, just ignore him." I'll tell you what. Really what went through my head is, the next night, or like a couple nights later, my wife and I were having sex, and all I could think about was that he was looking at me and my wife's ass as we were banging. And that kind of took the power out. I remember being like, "Oh, this guy's looking at my wife's ass right now. What the fuck?" Like, you know, and that kind of took the power out of the situation. And then after that experience, I feel like that was like the last my son saw or felt or had things. You get older, you kind of lose it. And that was it. We've never had anything like that again, really.
I could just imagine you like turning into the corner during sex, like staring down the corner and like shouting out loud, is this what you want, old man?
Hey man,
your wife's like, "Who the fuck are you talking to?"
I had to stop myself from saying something like that. So I didn't want to ruin the mood of the moment, but I was definitely thinking, and I'll never forget. I think Marvelous Miss Maisel was on TV at the same time. Also, it was weird. I went from like watching TV to hook it up to fucking old man looking at my ass and in my wife's ass. Yeah, you know, it was weird.
That's some kind of fetish. You know, there's a group for that out there.
I'm sure there is. Yeah.
You can pay for that.
Yeah.
Hey, whatever helps you get there, whatever.
Right. Not here, Jeff. There you go.
I don't yuck anybody's yum. No way.
Yep.
Oh shit, man, I'm so bummed that we didn't get to hang out together more during Horror Hound, because you guys are freaking rad.
Thanks, man. We'll do the next go round. That's all.
That's true. I didn't even know you guys were karaoke. I saw you guys afterwards.
Oh yeah, we weren't singing though. We were just taking in the scene. You did a great job, a great interpretation of, if I remember, was Olivia Rodrigo that you did, right?
I did. Last, I did yeah. do that.
Yeah. Are you a karaoke guy? Is that your thing?
Normally, no. Honestly, I do have some pretty, not severe crippling, but like mild social anxiety, you know, public speaking, shit like that. So like anytime I get up to do karaoke, I'm like shaking.
You pulled it off, man. You did a great job.
You let it rip. It was great.
Yeah, it was for the listeners. I did my best metalcore version of "Good for You" by Olivia Rodrigo.
It was nice. Good. It was good. I was like, yeah. "Oh yeah, he's doing Olivia right now. Nice, it's fucking awesome."
Bring that one out again. There's that deserves another chance. That's a good one.
I think last year I did a Taylor Swift metalcore version. I can't remember. Maybe next year I'll do a TikTok by Kesha.
Okay. All right. That's sick. Okay. I'd like to hear that version.
Or a metalcore version of Baby Got Back. I don't know if I can scream and rap at the same time. But
that's hard. That's hard. Only Fred Durst can do that.
Yeah.
Are you a musician as well, Raul?
I've been a drummer for a long time, but okay. I haven't, you know, adulthood gets in the way and I haven't had a kit for many, many years, but I still consider myself a drummer at heart. I do plan to get a kit with all this vast empty space behind me.
There you go. Fill that up for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. Drummers are, they're the hardest ones to find. I play guitar and I mean, I adult life gets in the way of everything, but I feel like once you find a good drummer, everyone goes to them because they have the kit. So it's, I'll look you up when I form my band. How about that?
All right. Sounds good. So real quick, I think we're kind of getting towards, because I like to keep this within an hour.
Perfect.
So what's next for you guys? I mean, I assume this short will be available for widely after you guys do your festival run. But after that, what's next?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we are in the process of taking this short. And then making actually what we're doing is working through what we're calling a dad horror anthology. So this short, along with about five others, will make up this anthology of all horror based films, but like somewhat realistic and in the realm of reality horror films that feature a dad as the protagonist and some kind of fucked up stuff that's happening around them. And what we're actually doing with the Two Knocks on a Door short is we're expanding that. So this segment that you see, that will be a segment of the film, but that character of Matt, that Max plays, the character of Mike, we'll see him before all this stuff happens, the early days, him finding out he's going to be pregnant, finding out his wife's pregnant over the three trimesters. And then as he is going through this journey of, you know, becoming an expecting father, meeting different characters throughout that will share their stories, or he'll have stories in the news, or he'll meet peripheral characters, and then we'll follow those characters and that'll be their individual segments. So it's an anthology, but it's not necessarily like, you know, like campfire tales where like four friends sit at a campfire and each one tells a story. It's more like a, you know, a trick or treat or a southbound things where it's like interconnected stories that weave in and out, and you find characters, you see them, their moments, and then you come back to the main one. So that's kind of what we're working on right now. And just finished a pitch deck and we're getting ready to raise funding. And that's where we're going. So we're hoping, you know, within this year or early next year, we can start shooting. And we have a couple scripts done. We have two of the segments done, the Two Knocks segment done. We have another segment that our DP and editor and our producing partner, Billy Naraki, he already filmed and shot one for two and wrote something and did a lot of the work himself. And so we're getting ready to roll on that, but we're gonna kind of keep living in this like dad horror, dad protagonist themed world of fucked up stuff happening to a dad, and hopefully in this case the dad saving the day, not necessarily boofing it like our character does, you know.
Well, I mean, hopefully that doesn't happen too much, because
yeah, there's a little protagonist, a little room.
Yeah. I remember at the film festival when we were initially talking, I told you guys about a movie called Killing Ground. Did either of you guys end up watching it?
No, you know, I'm glad you were. I'm going through my list of films that people recommend to, because I haven't watched a single thing since. I haven't watched a TV show yet. I was finishing a book and I just got crazy work. So I've got a couple short films to watch some of the filmmakers there. And that is on my list.
It's funny. I was actually looking at that up today. So is Killing Ground the one where the people are going camping and they kind of come across a horrific scene? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was actually, I just remember the log line and being like, I have to watch this. This looks very disturbing and amazing, but I haven't had the chance yet. I'm glad you brought it up again. But do you feel like that? Tell us more about that.
I mean, it's... So the movie's kind of told in two parts, intermingling within each other, like two different timelines. There's two different groups of people that are camping in the same area. One is a family, parents, and three children. One of, like, the oldest is a girl, and then like a middle child that's a boy, and then a baby. And they get wrecked. Riggedy wrecked, man. Except for the baby. The baby actually kind of survives, largely because the people don't even know he's there. But the second people, you know, arrive at the campsite. They see their tent that's still up. They're like, oh, fuck, man. Other people got to be here. But whatever, they set up their tent. And then they notice these people haven't come back. There's no action in the tent. They don't have a campfire, nothing. So they are just kind of going around exploring. They eventually come across a baby, and they don't, at the time, they don't know that he's the last surviving member of his family.
I gotta watch this. Oh yeah.
Oh man. It's nihilistic. It is nihilistic as shit. And I honestly love it.
Okay. You sold Correct. It. Yeah. Yeah. It's out. I might have, well, the short films will be quicker to watch, but I'm going to have to watch that this week.
Awesome. Well, I mean, let me know guys, when you watch and what you thought of it. We actually on the regular show, covered it in depth on Headlong and a Monster. I can't remember what episode it was, but somewhere we covered it. I think we're going to wrap this up here. Do you guys have any plugs or stuff like that, that you want to share with the audience, just to let them know where they can find you, where they can catch you, follow your work?
Yeah, sure. So you could find, this is Eric. You could find me on Instagram. It's at Eric Reggie, ERICRECGGIE. We usually post a lot of our updates about our films there. And if you want to check out our movie, it's called IN space. No actual space there. In action, ACTION. If you look for it on the internet, on Google, if you look for it on Amazon, usually Looney Tunes Back in Action comes up, because we chose a terrible title for our film. It's clever and interesting. And when we got reviews, apparently people liked the title, but you can't find the fucking movie anywhere on the internet, because there's a lot of action movies with inaction in it. You got Missing in Action, Looney Tunes Back in Action. So if you're looking for it, you want to check it out, it's type in inaction and then add like Silvera or Keneally in it, and you'll usually find it from there.
Okay. If you send me the link to that, I'll put that in the show notes, so listeners can just look in the show notes and click the link, and awesome. They can go right to it.
Awesome. Thank you. That'd be fantastic. Thank you. Oh yeah, and my handle is Captain Keneals. That's Captain KENEALS. I mostly post pictures of my babies, but occasionally when we have writing projects, I share those too. So definitely check it out, so you can keep up to date with stuff.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you so much for, you know, letting me interview you and for making this movie, man, because I freaking loved it.
Awesome. Thanks, Raul. Thank you so much for having us on, and thank you for checking it out. And hopefully, we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks so much. We really Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Oh, and if you guys ever have anything that you want to share, any future projects that you want to promote or talk about or anything like that, please reach out to me. I'd love to interview you guys again about any future work you have going on.
Awesome. Absolutely. We'd love to be on. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. And listeners, thank you for sticking with me and enjoying this kind of verbal chaos that we had going on. And join us again next time as we once again dive headlong into monsters. Bye.